It's Success Happens on 930 WFMD, a discussion with leaders who share their pathways to success. Success Happens with your host, Jen Charlton.
Good morning and welcome everyone to Success Happens. It's great to be here. It's a lovely time of year. I had the pleasure of doing the White House tour this week. And if you follow me on Facebook, you'll find pictures of the gardens and the Washington Monument as I was standing inside the White House. And spring was in the air, and the flowers were in bloom, and everybody was in a great mood. And I bought a bunch of stuff from the White House gift shop. But I recommend everybody do that if you haven't done it in a while. I hadn't done it in years. So I appreciated it, I think, more as an adult than I probably did as a kid. But at any rate, great experience, great day, and it's great to be here. As you know, last week we had a great conversation about, you know, the Syrian conflict had just occurred. They had just gone in and dealt with Assad. And as a result of that, my guest and I started talking about importing products from overseas where there maybe aren't the tightest controls on what they put in our stuff that we buy. And as consumers, we are consumed with consuming. We just love our stuff. And unfortunately, when you don't have those controls, and particularly if it's in things in the area that affect our food and our nutrition and our well-being, it can impact our health. And there have been some, over the years, I've been kind of watching this thing on autism. So April is Autism Awareness Month. So I thought, what a great opportunity to talk about this, because we kind of planted some seeds last week that there have been things that have come in from China that are toys for kids that have had lead in them. Well, lead makes them really, really sick when they start chewing on them, and that's what kids do. So we don't have I don't have the confidence, frankly, in a lot of these consumable products that are coming from overseas if they have not had the controls or, frankly, the auditing process to ensure that what's coming in is safe for us. So this whole autism thing is really dealing with, I think, the idea of toxicity. There was a doctor that I saw do a show, and it was about her passionate belief that autism somehow is related to toxicity. And I myself have gone through detox programs with a nutritionist, doctor of naturopath, and it was an amazing experience. And for those of you who haven't heard the story, I actually, you know, had lead and, you know, all copper, all this stuff in my body that I ended up getting rid of and purging, and I felt better. So we are highly toxic humans, as my girlfriend would say. And today I thought we would focus on autism because I think we're seeing a drastic rise in the rates. It seems to me it's getting worse. It's more prevalent in boys. And so I have with me today a guest who has experienced this firsthand. He's also a medical doctor, Dr. Ben Krebs. So welcome to the show.
Nice to be with you, Jen.
Yeah, it's great. And I, you know, your story is amazing. So the first thing I want to do is have people first understand, you are what kind of medical doctor?
I'm an anesthesiologist and chronic and interventional pain specialist, but for the last 10 years, I've been focusing on more of a holistic healthcare practice deals with health and healing that's a little bit outside the mainstream of regular medicine. I kind of play both sides of the medical aisle.
Which I really appreciate, because having just shared with you that I'd done the whole detoxing thing, and I really believe there, mm-hmm. you have to take that holistic approach. And mm-hmm. certainly, you know, the pain med business, we could spend a whole show just on that. And I'll have you back to talk about it, right? Because of the whole opioid thing. But because of your medical background, you're uniquely positioned to deal with and cope with what you've had to deal with personally. So could you please share with our audience your personal story?
Well, my wife and I decided, she was an internal medicine doctor, critical care specialist, and I knew her as such. We met in residency, and I said, well, if you could do anything you want to do in life, what would you do? And she said, well, I'd be a mom. And I kind of like shook my head because I was like, what? You know, I don't know you as that. I know you as a hard-charging critical care doctor, you know, coding people and saving lives and pulling them out of the bowels of death and all that stuff. And she said, no, I really want to be a mom. I was like, okay. So in 2008, she retired. She did her last shift on June 30th, 2008, and our oldest son, Lazarus, was born on July 14th, 2008. And she stayed home. She wanted to be a mom. I was in the Army at the time, working as an anesthesiologist, and life is going along fine. Laz is developing normally. We're reading Goodnight Moon together at night. He's playing with cars, and they fall off and fall off the cliff, and he goes, wee! And he would play grocery store at his little kitchen and sing Row, Row, Row Your Boat in the bathtub, and, you know, things were normal. And I deployed to our second son, Kane, was born on December 1st, 2009, and I deployed to Iraq on December 31st, 2009. While I was in Iraq, my wife and I would be Skyping, and she'd say, you know, Laz is, he's not doing the things he did before. I'm like, well, what do you mean? She's like, well, he doesn't want to read his book anymore, and he doesn't play in the kitchen anymore, and he won't sing his song anymore. And I'm like, I said, well, you know, you're there by yourself. I just went to Iraq. He has a brand new baby brother that's, you know, taking up your time. These are probably situational changes, you know, things that are going on. This is just an adjustment, and, you know, it'll shake out in a few months. So we kept an eye on it. I got back from Iraq. We moved out here for me to do my pain fellowship at Walter Reed. And we were living in Rockville at the time, and I remember she said, you know, his language isn't developing. It's things that he's losing, some things he could do. He's probably 18 months, 2 years now at this time. She said, I think we should have him checked out. So we went to see a pediatric, you know, neurologist, and he said, you know, it sounds like you're dealing with, you know, something on the autism spectrum. I mean, he's two, so how much can you really know? There could be, you know, these could just be delays. You know, we don't know. So we started him in some speech therapy, but the speech therapy didn't take at all. I mean, it was just, it just wasn't, and it wasn't that the speech therapist wasn't doing a good job. It was, he couldn't do it. He just couldn't do it. The speech therapist was wonderful. It just, he just couldn't, he wasn't responding to it. So then we tried some ABA therapy.
Speak that in normal people talk. ABA is what?
I think ABA stands for Applied Behavioral Analysis.
Okay, got that. Okay.
Yeah, it's a common therapy that people use, and they would come to our house and give them these therapies, and they give them cards and say, hey, you know, it's like behavioralism. It's saying, hey, if you want the cookie, then you have to show us the cookie card, you know, okay, to try to get the communication going. So we spent the first 4 years of his life trying to do these interventions and like jumpstart this communication. Meanwhile, his brother Kane is also not talking. And so we're thinking to ourselves, well, that's kind of odd. But then again, you know, he doesn't have a big brother who's talking, so there's no modeling. Again, maybe this is just developmental. We'll see. At the same time, our third child is born in 2011, Credence, and he, you know, he's in the picture, and we got these three little boys at home, and my wife had a daughter from a previous marriage. I had a son from a previous marriage, and they were both, you know, neurotypical. they, you know, they weren't autistic, and, you know, it's kind of too early to tell. Well, as things are going, all of a sudden, all three boys are not talking. I get out of the Army in 2013. I moved back here to Middletown, and we start enrolling Lazarus in the Challenges program for autistic kids. He started, I guess, in first grade there. The Frederick County Public Schools has a wonderful classroom for kids just with autism, and it's called the Challenges program, and it's just outstanding. And so we got him enrolled in that, and you know, he's still to this day, he'll be 10 in July, and he makes progress. It's just very, very slow. Meanwhile, the second child looked like he was going down the same path, and he did not talk until he was 4 and a half. Now he's still got the social issues of autism, but he's much more high functioning. Our youngest child, Credence, is just turned seven, and he talks, but he pretty much just repeats a bunch of things. He doesn't. He can, like a toddler, he can say if he wants a cookie, or if he goes by Toys R Us, he says, "Oh, Toys R Us," you know. But there's not a whole lot of conversations, a lot of repeating things and things like that. And what I've found is my experience is this: I've got three boys that are on the autism spectrum, and that spectrum is very, very wide. And I have one that's very high functioning, and who will be independent. I have one who is very, very smart, but probably, you know, will not be independent. And my youngest one is got some, you know, it's a different flavor of autism. And what he's got going on, his stuff is much more kind of like he'll just scream for 4 hours straight for no reason and cry for no reason, and then he'll just stop. You know, there was nothing wrong. There was never anything wrong. He's just crying. And so very different flavors.
Let me kind of bring people into this, because if you haven't dealt with autism, you might know it from afar, but you may not understand kind of the intricacies that you're pointing to. But the autism spectrum, autism is actually considered autism spectrum disorder. And that spectrum component is really quite critical to understanding autism, because it is a developmental disorder, and people develop differently depending on where they fit on that spectrum, correct?
They develop differently based on what their function is. As the saying goes, if you met with someone with autism, then you've met someone with autism. No two autistic persons are alike. And that's why I've got these three boys that are all in the autism spectrum, and they're all their display of skill, of communication, of social skills are all very, very different. My oldest lad is more classic autism, I guess I'd call it. Autism means into oneself, like auto, where you get the AU from, means into oneself. And he very much enjoys his alone time in his room. I want to go play with him. He doesn't want that. He wants to be alone in his room. That's his happy spot. And so your show's called Success
Happens.
And yeah. Right. I thought it's such a unique title in that how do we make success happen in this family? And the biggest take home from that I would want to impart to anyone that would care to listen is you make success happen in autism by going into their world, not expecting them to come into your world. So what do I do with Laz? I go into his room and I spend time with him there in his safe place. And I go into his world. And so success happens for autism, I have found, where I meet the children where they are, not expect them to come into my world, you know?
So let's back up a second. So statistically, probably highly improbable that one family would have 100% of their children between two same parents, right? Autistic. Yep. I mean, that is a shocking reality in a lot of ways, given the statistical improbability of that. So we're coming up on a break, but I want to just understand from you, what was it like for you and your wife the moment you found out, wow, we have three kids that are autistic?
So very, very hard on her. I think I was a little bit detached from it and looking at it from a scientific point of view and like, okay, how do we fix this problem? What do we do about it? She was more like, oh my gosh, you know, my baby, you know, look what's going on. Things changed for us. We were in the store. We were in Wegmans down in Woodbridge, Virginia. And Laz is just screaming. He's in the little seat on the cart, and he's in line, and he's not even screaming. He just makes noises. He's just loud, and he does little buzzles where he'll ba 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 ba, you know. And she felt embarrassed by that. And I said, "Hey, this is our kid. This is who he is. Their problem, not our problem." And that moment, she goes, "That's right." And that moment, she changed right that second, like turned on a dime, and she's like, nope, this is who my kid is, and that's the way it is. And if it changes, fine. If it doesn't change, I don't care. He's such a wonderful boy. All the boys are so loving. So, like, Laz, my oldest, he knows what love is more than anybody I've ever met. You know, he knows how to show love. He'll melt your heart. If it meant switching out that character and make him able to talk, I don't know that I'd do it, because it's just it's more valuable. It's more precious that boy knows what love is. He knows how to give and receive love.
Wow.
What more could you ask for?
Thank you so much. Hold on the line. We're going to go to a quick break, and you're listening to Success Happens, and we're celebrating, acknowledging, honoring Autism Awareness Month. We'll be right back.
When you run a business, a lot of things can get in the way of what it is you set out to do. Replacing the couch in the lobby, finding a great deal on coffee creamers, managing all your office printing. Whoa, hold on. We can help you there. Whether you need a new multifunction printer, supplies, or some simple advice on lowering your printing cost, your local Xerox authorized sales agent can help. And we're located right in your backyard.
Visit Xerox Complete Document Solutions online at cdsxrx.com or give them a call at 301-825-9220.
Guys, if you want to live without ED, then it's important you learn about penile implants. Here's Dr. Taj Karimi.
If pills and injections haven't solved your difficulties in the bedroom, I want to tell you about a permanent solution from AMS Men's Health. It is important that you and your partner learn about penile implants and its tremendous impact on your self-esteem.
The Penile Implant Institute of Greater Washington is a world-class destination for sexual medicine and urology. To learn more, go online. It's penileimplantdc.com. That's penileimplantdc.com.
When was the last time you had fresh, homemade ice cream? Sweeties on the Creek is making ice cream. We invite you to stop in and taste test our fresh-made ice cream right in the store. Or enjoy our selection of Gifford sorbets, frozen yogurts, or creamy shakes and sundaes with a great cup of coffee. Choose gifts for your favorite someone from our collection of candy sweets, treats, fashion finds for the gals, and Disney products for kids young and old. Stop in for a dessert after your next visit downtown. It's Sweeties on the Creek, just up from Market Street.
This is Jennifer Charlton with Success Happens. If you are out of the area and you'd like to listen live online, go to WFMD.com to hear our show Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. on Free Talk 930 WFMD. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton. I have with me today Dr. Ben Krebs. And Ben is a father of three boys who are amazing, loving kids, and they happen to be on the autism spectrum. And we're talking today because it is Autism Awareness Month. And I think it's important for us to understand, because this diagnosis is getting more and more prevalent. Right. And so I was looking into, you know, what are some of the beliefs or scientific understanding about autism and what are the causes? So would you like to speak to that, Ben, since you are a doctor? Sure. And you've done your analysis.
Right. And the boy's mom, you know, she being a physician as well, really looked into this pretty thoroughly. And I remember for our third child, you know, here we got two kids who aren't talking, and we're like, oh goodness, you know, here we got this third boy coming up. What do we do? And I remember we had held back on some of his vaccines, thinking, oh, you know, is there something to this? Do we need to watch out for this to protect him and see what's what? Unfortunately, there's been a lot of disinformation about that, and frankly, some lies. There was Andrew Wakefield has, you know, published in The Lancet about vaccines causing autism. It's the first time in The Lancet's history they had to publish a retraction, and he ended up getting a lot of rightfully so persecution from that. And that had started the whole vaccines cause autism type debate. And part of it is too the.
And so let me just understand. You're saying that is not accurate. In your opinion,
correct. I mean, there just isn't any scientific data that shows it. I mean, there just isn't. Now, does that mean we don't look at everything? Well, no, we should look at everything. Of course, we're scientists. We have not only that, just like all the other millions of parents with autistic children, we're just as desperate as they are. If I can help my child by doing something different, you know, or changing something, I'm going to do it. Of course, I am. And I'm, as a holistic physician, myself, my professional practice, hey, I'll do anything to heal my patients. Anything. I don't want to put anything off the table or be biased or to that. I just want them to get better. But when you look at the data just doesn't support it. And so, are all these kind of, like you mentioned at the top of the show about the lead and the toys from China and these sort of things? Yeah, these are unhealthy practices. Do they cause autism? There's been no direct link to it. I wish it were that simple. I just wish it was. It's just not. And maybe one day it will be. And there's people doing research on it, and I don't want to exclude anyone from that and their ability to keep an open mind with regard to science. But at this point in time, I see no evidence for that. And so I vaccinate my kids and we move on. But I'm looking at everything. Of course I am.
I will tell you this person I worked with when I did my detoxing worked with another friend of mine whose son was at the time, I think 8, and was on the spectrum, and they started dealing with it from the perspective of diet, took him off of gluten, and mm-hmm. it seemed to make a difference.
Right. Now, if I could just speak to that for a second, because I believe it depends on where you are on the spectrum, okay? If you are in the high-functioning, kind of like where my 8-year-old is, you're talking, you're in mainstream classes, you have some quirkiness about you, you have some hyperactivity about you, and you want to round out and smooth out those things, I believe that a holistic approach to doing that is great. I believe in detoxification. I believe in better diet. Of course, I believe in that for most of my patients professionally. As A.T. still said, to find health should be the object of the doctor. Any fool can find disease. So if we work on finding health, we're going to round out and smooth out a lot of those symptoms that you see in high-functioning autistic kids. However, when you're dealing with, like, my other two that are severe and nonverbal, when you're 10 and 8-year-old and you're not potty trained yet, and we have locks on our pantry, we have locks on our refrigerator, we have combination locks on double doors for safety reasons because they don't know about what danger is, that is a different place on the autism spectrum. And there's even kids worse off than my boys. There are kids that self-stim by plucking out their own eyeballs. Now, that is rare and thankfully and extreme, but it's all part of that big, long spectrum. And when you are, when you are working on that kind of severity, those kind of lifestyle changes don't always have the potency to overcome it.
Yeah, I got that. And so I want to just wrap up this segment with, there are three different types of autism spectrum disorders, according to some research I've done. One is the classic autism, what they call autistic disorder, what most people think of when they hear autism. Then there's Asperger syndrome. Mm-hmm. And then there's pervasive developmental disorder. And do these three go onward in the spectrum from less severe to more severe? Are they just different?
They're kind of just different. Pervasive development disorder, when Laz was first diagnosed at 2 years old, basically what they said was he's PDD-NOS, which is the acronym that says for pervasive developmental disorder not otherwise specified, which means is we're pretty sure there's something wrong. We don't know what it is. We're going to throw him under this umbrella so he can get some speech therapy, okay? And so that's pretty much your whole spectrum, your big umbrella. Asperger's, which was, again, the high-functioning, it's the people that you think of that are, they live independently, they work in society, but they are the kind of people that are working with numbers, and, they're your Rain Man type of autism. And again, probably are independent, but you might find them in computer science and that kind of things. You're hyper nerdy kind of people. That's Asperger-y. And they've actually done away with that now. It's not a term that they use in the new guidelines. But still, I think just for conversation's sake, I think it's a good distinction to make.
So you're saying they've done away with the distinction Asperger?
Yeah, I believe in the latest DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, they did away with that diagnosis. Okay. So it's just Asperger, or I'm sorry, just autism spectrum disorder as a wider umbrella. And that, again, that changes your number of diagnoses. Again, you say, well, hey, people are being diagnosed with autism more. Well, yeah, but how many of those are Asperger-y people versus people that are more severe and need, you know, extra assistance and help? Those are two very different distinctions.
Very
and
good.
So, yeah.
All right. We're at the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a break for news and weather. Really appreciate your wisdom and your experience and your sharing your story. It's amazing. You're listening to Success Happens. I have with me today Dr. Ben Krebs. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions, Sweeties on the Creek, and Dr. Taj Karimi. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton. I have with me this morning Dr. Ben Krebsen. Ben is a dad. He's an extraordinary person who's committed to health and well-being, and he has three children who are diagnosed as autistic. And I wanted to just bring us back to this idea of the what we can do to assist you, children who are diagnosed with this. So I guess I'd like to start with going back to the challenges program in the public school system, because it sounds like you've been really happy with that. And I want to kind of give people some perspective. Most diagnoses apparently happen because it's a developmental disorder. It's diagnosed early on in the first 2 or 3 years, maybe 4 years of a child's life. Is that accurate?
Sorry, Jen, I had you on mute.
Yeah, that's okay. Go ahead.
Yes, that is accurate. Yes.
Okay, so when we look at the school systems, they become critically important in helping us with this. And I want to kind of also give some perspective. I've been looking for some data in terms of how many kids are diagnosed today with autism. And frankly, I'm having trouble finding the data. And, you know, Google is my friend, and it's not readily apparent. But it used to be, when I looked at this a number of years ago, 1 in 68 boys were diagnosed.
I believe that's right. That's the number I heard. Yeah.
Yeah. So what that means is, and girls are not diagnosed as frequently. So do you have any thoughts about, one, why that is, and two, how that plays out in the school system? So let's kind of cover that.
I do have some thoughts about why that is. The one, you have to look at the fact that there's more awareness, there's more diagnosing going on. We've seen this through history of things where there's not as much awareness, so people aren't looking for it. People that were autistic were just, 60 years ago said, well, you're mentally retarded, you're going into an institution. So now, you know, we're smarter, we have more awareness, and we're looking out for it. That's number one. Number two, again, the change of taking away the Asperger diagnosis and going into just an autism spectrum disorder changes those numbers, because now people that would have been labeled Asperger's or diagnosed Asperger's are now diagnosed as autism spectrum disorder. And
So let me interject. Hold on 1 second. So that makes a lot of sense. If you change the way you diagnose something, sure, it impacts your numbers. I got it. Okay, go ahead.
Yep. The other thing is, too, is that I remember I started medical school in the year 2000. I started doing my clinical rotations around 2002. And at that time, back in the 90s, I was at Hood College, and I did my honors thesis on children with ADHD. ADD was a very kind, I'm going to use this term, it's going to sound insensitive, but I believe it's correct. It was ADD back in the early 90s was a vogue diagnosis. It was new, it was out there, and people were looking for ADD. ADD then morphed into, well, now we have ADHD, where attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And because it was vogue, I did my honors thesis, a hood on it. When I got into my clinical rotations in medical school and pediatrics, ADHD wasn't as popular anymore. We were using the term, goodness gracious,
I hate it when that happens.
It'll come to me later, but it was a different diagnosis.
Sure.
That bipolar,
right?
Because we're bipolar. And then, so for about 3 years, from 2002 to 2005, I noticed that all these kids were kind of bipolar. Then things got shifted, and autism kind of became more aware and more popular. And we said, okay, now these kids that were hyperactive, you know, we're going to now say that they're Asperger, you know, that they have Asperger's. And so the question is...
Well, I want to interject something. Or what we said, the PDD, what is it? NOS.
Yeah.
Not otherwise...
Exactly. They're PDD, NOS, or pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified. Exactly.
Right.
And so, again, it's hard to keep track of these numbers when the rules keep changing, the metrics keep changing. And so...
Let me stop you for a second. Yeah. So I think what that also leads to... Now, you could say that we're getting more sophisticated about it, mm-hmm. perhaps, but you could also see where people could be misdiagnosed. I mean,
they would
be characterized or kind of plugged into a particular diagnosis, and it may not be accurate.
Well, even that of my own child, my 8-year-old, okay? My 8-year-old didn't talk till he was 4 and a half, and we assumed he was going to follow the same path as his brothers. This morning, he rattled off to me all of the first ladies of the United States, starting with Marsha Washington up to Melania Trump. Okay? Now... what does that mean? It means he's nerdy. Okay, that's what it means. He's a nerd like his dad.
Well, he has an extraordinary capacity intellectually.
Absolutely. I said, honey, you are just the smartest little boy I know. I said, that's just incredible that you have memorized all these first ladies. And I don't know. And of course, he's really into presidents right now. And it used to be, you know, you see the classic example of the kid with autism spectrum disorder who's into dinosaurs, you know, and says, oh, I can tell you all the dinosaurs and stuff. These are things that are more of a personality trait that may not be a disorder. So let's make a distinction between what is a personality problem versus what is a disorder. A disorder means it interferes with your life. My 10-year-old, when I woke him up this morning, had urine everywhere, okay? That interferes with his life. We had to change clothes, take a shower, and do all that. My 8-year-old did not. He got up and got his president's flashcard and started talking to me about that. That is a personality trait. And so maybe these will even evolve into other diagnoses to help to tease these different kinds of things out that are on the spectrum. So we have and how my 8-year-old is mainstream. My other two are not. And so
let me ask you this.
Very different.
When fast forward, you know, they're adults. You know, I think one of the opportunities, I'm going to say, we have mm-hmm. is to look at, and I work very closely in human services with adult services and working with people with developmental disorders, you know, in terms of program delivery and, you know, how we take care of our people, right? And so it, you know, I'm very tuned into this. So what is the opportunity for people like your sons to be contributing members of society using their extraordinary talents, not viewing it as a disorder?
Jen, that is absolutely the right question. And that is absolutely the right outlook, because I don't need to fix autism in my house. I may never fix autism. I need to figure out how I live with autism, how I function with autism, and how my boys become contributing members of society, how they have purpose when they wake up in the morning, how they know and express love and receive love. That is what I have to figure out. And that's what's wonderful is each of my boys has their own little combination lock. And as a dad, I get to sit down every day and figure out what their combination is. And it's different for all three of them. And I love it, because when I sit down with each one, I get to dial in that combination. All of a sudden, I'm in. Just like that. My oldest boy, Laz, does not talk, but he's incredibly smart. He's done some things that make me realize I see a little window of how incredibly intelligent this kid is. At night, he likes heavy physical pressure, so I lay my body on him. He has his little blanket over him. I lay my body over the blanket, and I kind of smush him down. It's called there's a name for it. It's called heavy pressure or something that you do with autistic kids. And I whisper in his ear, and I say, you are the smartest, you are the funniest, you are the most handsome, and I know that about you. I see it inside of you, and don't think for a second that Daddy's missing any of that. And just because you can't tell me doesn't mean I don't know it. And every night we say that over and over again, so he knows that his daddy isn't missing out on who he really is inside. Now, will that manifest into some one day at 14 years old, he sits down on a laptop and writes the great American novel? Maybe, maybe not. I have no idea. But that doesn't matter to me. I have an N of one with him. his life matters to me. And with each parent of autistic kids, that is what matters with them. And the services that we give, Laz will find the thing that allows him to contribute. Maybe it's working with animals. Maybe it's, you know, who knows, like any other kid, you say, well, here, try out an instrument, try out an art class, see what you like, see what you have talent for. My 8-year-old right now, he might be the next, he says he's going to be the 50th president of the United States. So at this point in time, he might be right, you know?
Aww.
And one thing real quick that's worth mentioning is there was a book called NeuroTribes written a few years back that looked at the epidemiology of neurological disorders and specifically autism. And one thing that we showed a big spike on was when Silicon Valley happened, when the Bill Gates and the Steve Jobs came together in Silicon Valley, they started to recruit the nerds of the world, the computer nerds of the world, to come build, you know, this great empire of this great electrical empire, right? And when the nerds got together and they started to mating, they started mating and having kids, they started to throw autistic kids. Silicon Valley was a huge, if you look at the epidemiology of it, it's a huge cluster of autism kids. And you look at it too, this leads to a genetic contribution or predisposition, at least, if not possibly a genetic cause, to how these things are expressed. And then you look into the epigenetics of the things that influence how a gene expresses, and that might also have, you know, other things to do with it. So the science behind this is very complicated, but it's very exciting as well. So you can look at the science at it, and I do that, and I want to do that, and I'll keep doing that. But when it really comes right down to it, I want to know is, what do my kids look like as adults? How do they live? How do they love? How do they contribute to society? How do they have purpose when they get up in the morning? And that's what really matters. And for each one, it's an individual combination. And I got to figure that out.
Oh, it's wonderful. Okay, you're listening to Success Happens. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back for our last segment with Dr. Ben Krebs, a dad and an extraordinary guy. Thank you. You're listening to Success Happens. We have to thank our sponsors because I wouldn't be here if it weren't for them. Xerox Complete Document Solutions, Sweeties on the Creek, Dr. Taj Karimi. We'll be right back.
Guys, if you want to live without ED, then it's important you learn about penile implants. Here's Dr. Taj Karimi.
If pills and injections haven't solved your difficulties in the bedroom, I want to tell you about a permanent solution from AMS Men's Health. It's a surgical implant, and it's covered by most insurance plans and Medicare.
The Penile Implant Institute of Greater Washington is a world-class destination for sexual medicine and urology for this minimally invasive surgery. To learn more, go online. It's penileimplantdc.com. That's penileimplantdc.com.
When you run a business, a lot of things can get in the way of what it is you set out to do. Replacing the couch in the lobby. Finding a great deal on coffee creemers. Managing
hey,
all your office printing.
Hold on. We can help you there.
Whether you need a new multifunction printer, supplies, or some simple advice on lowering your printing costs, your local Xerox authorized sales agent can help. And we're located right in your backyard.
Visit Xerox Complete Document Solutions online at cdsxrx.com or give them a call at 301-825-9220.
When was the last time you had fresh, homemade ice cream? Sweeties on the Creek is making ice cream. We invite you to stop in and taste test our fresh-made ice cream right in the store. Or enjoy our selection of Gifford sorbets, frozen yogurts, or creamy shakes and sundaes with a great cup of coffee. Choose gifts for your favorite someone from our collection of candy sweets, treats, fashion finds for the gals, and Disney products for kids young and old. Stop in for a dessert after your next visit downtown. It's Sweeties on the Creek, just up from Market Street.
It's all about your car. Call in with questions to Dave Serio beginning in less than 30 minutes right here on 930 WFMD.
Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton, and I have with me Dr. Krebs. And I want to, before I go back into the show, I just want to let everybody know that you can support a very important program that I'm participating in right after this show, which is called Walk the Plank. And it is for SHIP, which is the Student Homeless Initiative Partnership, a nonprofit charity that provides urgent and essential resources for homeless youth in Frederick County here in Maryland. And right now in Maryland, and I'm sure this is probably true in our other areas that are also listening, but in Frederick County, we've got 778 youth attending Frederick County that are currently homeless. which is heartbreaking. So I encourage you to support this Walk the Plank. It's going to be all about pirates, and we're going to have a lot of fun. If you want to go on and donate to support homeless kids, shipfrederick.com, S-H-I-P, frederick.com/walk-the-plank. Okay, so Walk the Plank, and that's happening today, and it's to help these kids have access to a summer program that keeps them up to current in their schooling. And, you know, it's a lot harder for kids who are dealing with homelessness to stay engaged at school and graduate. So let's support these kids having success, okay? So I also want to mention that when we're talking about these severe diagnoses where people are in some cases not able to live independently, our great governor brought into being the Maryland Commission on Caregiving. It used to be a council. It's now a commission. And that commission really looks at family caregivers across the state and the difference they make for their family and loved ones. Sometimes it's a neighbor. But informal caregiving is essential to this process of caring for people who, in some cases, in your case, Ben, your kids, as they grow older, you know, may need that kind of support. So think about Maryland Caregiving, the Commission on Caregiving. Okay. All right. So I want to get back to what we were talking about and this idea of diagnosis, because I think we look at it and we say, gosh, how do we know if we have a young one, if there is something to be concerned about? Kind of like you and your wife, you're not sure. Is it just kind of, you know, a stage they're in, sort of thing? Easter Seals has a great resource, and I have the pleasure of working with Larry Brom with Easter Seals professionally, and it's a great organization. You can go there and find some information, but on their site, some of the things that they say that you want to pay attention to in those early years are, like you had mentioned, Ben, they're not speaking, but they might seem tuned out. They don't have a kind of a sociability about them. You mentioned that they kind of that autism is in oneself, so they maybe isolate a bit or withdraw. Having unusually long and severe temper tantrums. Now, I will tell you, when my son was young, we were concerned. There were times when I thought, oh, my goodness, he is off the rails, you know? And so we watched it very carefully. So do you have anything to add to that kind of advice for people who may be concerned about this?
No, I think that's good advice. It is, you know, kids just are so different, whether they're neurotypical or they're somewhere on the spectrum or have some other sort of developmental delay. Kids are just so different. And it's best just to kind of keep a watchful eye, talk to your healthcare professionals and your pediatricians about it. If you have concerns, hopefully they can give you some nice straight answers and help you know what is worth being concerned about and what you can kind of let go. And so that would be a good place to start. Try to stay away a little bit from the internet, because you can lead you down a path that you don't really need to go down all the time. So take it with a grain of salt, but try to rely on your pediatrician who, you know, they see so much of this now. They have a really good, they have the finger on the pulse of autism. There's been enough of it around that they see it quite often now. They know what's what. So I think that's probably your best place to start.
Okay, very good. So, and they also mentioned the American Academy of Pediatrics. You can go online and they can provide a list of pediatricians that are, you know, really specific to this work. Mm-hmm. So in closing, because we just have a couple more minutes as we wrap up, what do you want people to know about, I guess, from a parent's standpoint? You know, we talk a lot in my business of self-care. You know, when you're the caregiver, like you are, you know, how do you cope?
Oh, you mean like self-care?
Well, and how do you cope when you have the stress of three boys and, you know, and listen, it's three boys are stressful no matter how you slice it. So,
right.
So added with this, right? So how do you recommend to parents as caregivers to cope?
That's a great question, and it's a very important question, because if you don't, I remember Cindy Pearl was one of Laz's first challenges teacher, and the bully's mom unfortunately passed away from cancer in 2013, and when that happened, I remember Cindy came up to me and she said, "Hey, I used to be a flight attendant." She goes, "Put the oxygen mask on yourself first before you try to put it on anybody else." And that is the most important thing. I can't be the best parent I can be. And I've since remarried, and God's grace is such that he looks at that kind of trauma and he brings an angel in to say, "I'm going to stand in the gap and be a mother to these children for the rest of my life." And so my current wife and I work very hard on putting the oxygen mask on ourselves first. Our oldest boy, Laz, is awake from 2 to 4 o'clock every night. Just happy, but just awake and kind of making a lot of loud screaming noises. This is every night. And he's happy. And he's in there with his iPad in his room, and he's watching his YouTube Baby Einstein videos that he likes. But that means you are also awake from 2 to 4 in the morning. And then the other one gets up at 6. And so her and I make sure that when we find that our tank is, you know, when that light comes on in our tank, we stop, we get some help, we take a break. Sometimes her sister just comes over and watches the kids for 6 hours, and we just go to our bedroom and just kind of shut the door and just kind of take a break first, because if we don't, we won't have the energy to sustain. So if you're a parent with a kid with any kind of developmental delay, any kind of special needs of any kind, put the oxygen mask on yourself first before you try to give everything to your kid or you run out of gas.
That is such great advice. Such great advice. Yeah. Brings tears to my eyes. I'm really, you know, and what an amazing woman I'm sure your wife is. And, you know, it's kudos to both of you as you were able to find each other. That's always a great, you know, ending to the story.
That's
so
God.
Yeah. So
that's just God. I don't understand that.
But. Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, God always has a plan, I say. Might not be my plan, but we have to roll with it, because his is always going to be the right one. So that being said, I want to just give you an opportunity to share any other thoughts you might have that you'd like to leave people with.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that if you look at my 10-year-old, for example, and he's in Wegmans, jumping up and down with his flapping his arms, going da 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 da, and you think, "Whoa, what's up with that? Why do they bring that kid out here?" Well, it's because he's my kid. That's why, and I have to go get milk. That's why, and we go everywhere together, and we hang out. And inside his brain, he has pent up energy that he has to get out, kind of like a person with Tourette syndrome. The similarities of the neurology there is very similar to Tourette syndrome, where he has a pent up neuron that has to be fired. So he has to get up, I remember one time we were at a Chinese restaurant, and he would get up behind his chair and he'd go, da, 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 and then he'd sit back down and start eating his meal again. He just had, and my wife used to say, he just needs to get his buzzles out. He's got pent up buzzles. He's got to get them out. He got them out. It took 10 seconds. Now we're back eating our rice, you know? And so when you are out in the community and you see that, bring these children into your community and open yourself up to bring yourself into their world. Their world, quite possibly, there's a whole faction of parents with autistic kids who believe that their autistic kids are like angels from other planets and things. Now, I think that's a little far-fetched, but I like the sentiment that they have something to offer that might be extra special. And I want to find out what that little gift is. So instead of trying to fix it, I want to find out what that is.
Thank you, Dr. Krebs. We're at the top of the hour, and I thank you so much, and we will continue to look. God bless everybody. Have a great week.